Now, we all know that there's lots of misinformation about going about in public spaces regarding coronavirus. This morning, we're not going to chat about the virus per se, but rather the testing process, because we understand that private labs are now inundated with people coming in for testing. But we also want to get a little bit more information around that. In studio, I've got with me from Melomed, the doctors in the, I was going to say in the house, but that would have just, think of more than 100 people. Dr. Anis Ismail, salam alaikum.
Islam.
And then also Dr. Rafiq Abrams, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
And between the two of them, they'll be answering any of your questions. You're welcome to send it through to me on 47913 or 072-238-0712. Now, before we get into some of the questions that many came through since 6:30 this morning, I'm going to, between the two of you, you can decide who's going to answer that. If we just look at the process and procedures to get tested for COVID-19, you know, at which point do I feel that I need to have myself tested, and what would that process be?
I think before the listeners understand the process, they need to understand the who. So who do we test? Do we test everyone, and or do we test anyone who wants a test or is concerned that they may have COVID-19? And the simple answer to that is we can't test everyone, and we can't test everyone who wants the test. And there are different reasons for that. Firstly, it's bad medicine. And secondly, we have limited resources. We have limited ability to do the test. So we need to make sure that the tests are being done on the patients that actually warrant the test being done. So the National Institute of Communicable Diseases has outlined a set of criteria that the patient needs to fulfill in order to warrant testing. So those criteria are very simple. You have to have an acute respiratory illness. So you have to be coughing, have high fevers above 38, shortness of breath, difficulty breathing, aches and pains. But in addition to those symptoms, you have to have in the last 14 days either traveled to a high-risk country or in the last 14 days come into contact with a patient who has confirmed COVID-19 positive, or perhaps if you've been admitted to a hospital with a atypical pneumonia that's not responding to normal treatment. Those are the factors or the criteria that we will use to determine if you warrant testing. So for example, when I say it's bad medicine to test everyone, if we are testing asymptomatic people who don't have symptoms. So, for example, let's say someone has traveled overseas and they come back to South Africa and they're concerned that they may have COVID-19, but they don't have any respiratory infections. And we test them and the test comes back negative. We may have tested them too early and we may actually get a false negative result, meaning the accuracy of the test, if we're doing it on asymptomatic patients, might not be what it should be. Also, we have very limited ability to test, like I said, both in the national labs and in the private labs. So we have to test the patients that warrant testing. So over the last week, with the fear and the anxiety in the community, our emergency rooms have been overrun with patients. And by far and in large, these patients have been very well. Coming in, they may have traveled, or they may just have a sore throat and they're worried that they have COVID-19. But of course, the knock-on effect of all of these patients rushing to the emergency room is they all need to be consulted. Yeah. And the heart attacks, the strokes, the trauma patients are still coming to the emergency rooms. Yes. And all of these additional patients has put lots of strain on all of our medical practices and all of our hospitals, and caused longer waiting times. And the patients that need critical intervention have to wait longer periods. So it's important for the community to understand who actually needs testing. So once again, the criteria: you have an acute respiratory illness, coughing, high fevers above 38, shortness of breath, difficulty breathing, aches and pains. But in addition to that, you've traveled within the last 14 days to a high-risk area, or you've come into contact with someone who is a proven COVID-19 positive
patient. Or with somebody who also perhaps traveled.
You see, that's a gray area. For example, if I have a sore throat and my cousin was in the UK.
Right.
And I may have met my cousin. It doesn't necessarily mean I meet the criteria for testing. And there's been a lot of this gray area patients coming in wanting testing and not understanding that they truly fulfill the criteria to warrant testing.
I think the important point that Dr. Ismail has raised is that even those patients, if we do test them, the fact that the test is negative doesn't necessarily mean that they do not have COVID, you know, because we've tested them that early. Also, you can develop symptoms later. Also, you can be, you know, can contract the disease at a later point in time. So coming in very early for testing is not actually wise. I think another point to raise is the reason behind why we want to test, you know, from an individual point of view. I think lots of people want to have a test just for reassurances.
Yeah.
Just to know that, look, I don't have the disease, or I do have the disease. And, you know, the point of testing, I think the big point that we need to highlight is actually the request from you know, from the health minister and from all those that understand this disease, is that we have to have what's called social distancing. And social distancing is not, you know, you do not require a test or a test result to distance yourself socially. Mm. So I think that's very important. If you're concerned, whether you have symptoms or you don't have symptoms, if you're concerned about contracting the disease, or you want to help your fellow brother and, you know, limit the amount of damage this disease is going to cause, all of us have to play a role and obviously have this implement social distancing. And I think a bit later we can discuss, you know, what is meant by flattening of the curve and all those type of terms.
In fact, I wanted you to talk about the social distancing, because there are still a plethora amount of people coming through on my WhatsApp line asking me, why can't we have Jumu'ah? Mm. You know, for you guys to perhaps, as medical practitioners, for you to also share that information as to how that and why that is so important to maintain that social distancing. It's gone exactly 8:30. Tasnim Adams, our news editor, is at our news desk with the latest news.
News making headlines today. 36 provinces in South Africa have now confirmed coronavirus cases after the Free State recorded its first infections. The city of Cape Town has decided to temporarily close the Greenpoint Park as well as the Company Gardens in the CBD as part of its measures against COVID-19. And making international headlines, hundreds of people have defied restrictions on large gatherings in occupied Israel to protest outside the parliament. Those are your headlines. We'll be back at 9:00.
And for our final traffic update this morning, there's a stationary bus before the M5 highway interchange, so you can expect some heavy delays over this on the inbound in Maitland. There's congestion at the Kuberg Road if you're travelling on the Fortrek Road westbound. Then also Old Paul Road, there's obstruction there near the R300 bridge. Towards the N1 highway, if you're travelling on the R300, there's some congestion over there as well. If you have anything to report, please let me know on 072-238-0712 or 479-913.
Breakfast Beat on 91.3 FM. Your voice in the morning.
So this morning we are taking a look at, you know, the COVID virus, the process of testing, the procedures and the do's and don'ts and everything that goes with it. And before the break, Dr. Rafik, you spoke about the term called social distancing. And I want to touch on that before we get into anything else, because like I said, I've received so many messages, you know, with people being upset about Jumu'ah being cancelled and perhaps not understanding the full picture from a medical perspective as well. Please share comment on that between the two of you.
I think before we have to understand what our goals as a community is pertaining to this pandemic, and we have to understand the disease. Firstly, it's extremely contagious, more contagious than regular flu. That's number one. And number two is that you don't elicit symptoms immediately. So you may have the disease but only start developing symptoms after day 5, day 6, day 7. If we were to continue with our normal lives, going to mosque, going to school, socializing, going to braais and parties. If a patient is positive and they are asymptomatic and they go to a party with their family and they infect 5 people at this party, and those 5 people continue going to work and to school, and they infect each of them infect 5 people, and each of those 5 people infect another 5 people, what we will have is a surge in infections. And this is what has happened in, for example, in Italy, where they went from a few hundred cases to a few thousand cases in a matter of a few days or a few weeks. And what this does is, when you have a surge of infections, it overwhelms your healthcare system. All of a sudden, you have all of these people coming to the ERs, requiring ICU, requiring ventilation, and at a certain point you run out of beds in your hospitals, you run out of ventilators, and you can no longer provide the people that require critical care and ventilation the treatment that they need, and then your mortality rates start to go up. So that's important to understand why people need to stay away from one another. What Dr. Rafiq Abrams mentioned earlier about flattening the curve is, or social distancing, very simply is we just need to stay away from one another. If we stay away from one another, people will still get the infection, but they won't infect as many other people, meaning the volume of patients who are infected won't spike, meaning your hospital systems don't become overwhelmed, and the patients that require treatment can access treatment, and your mortality rates stay low. So your volume of cases is less over a longer period of time, and that's how we beat this disease.
Now also, you know, people, one of the questions that I've been getting since, you know, the whole COVID-19, you know, became like really big in Cape Town, you know, when we started getting more cases being reported, was people were asking, but Gulam, I've got a wedding. I've got 200 people. What do I do with 200 people? And I said, man, just get married on a Thursday night and just call it quits to play safe, you know? Yeah. People, even now, they want to know, is it advisable for us to, we've got a week-long vacation at one of the, you know, resorts here in Cape Town. Is it advisable for them to go?
Yeah, as Dr. Anis Ishmael has said, you know, obviously we're trying to lessen the burden on the healthcare system. So just to reiterate what he said earlier on, and using some numbers for as an example, you know, lots of people are concerned about getting the disease, right? And the thinking in the medical fraternity at the moment is the majority of the people are going to contract the disease at some point in time. But by far and large, the majority of people are going to be fine. You'll have normal flu symptoms. It will last a few days and you'll recover. You wouldn't need to go to hospital. Mm. So that's
about 80% of patients.
If not more.
Yeah.
So let's put it down in numbers. So say, for example, 100 people test positive. Of the 100 people, about 2 to 5 of them will have severe symptoms requiring some type of ventilator support in a hospital environment. So we're saying 90 to 95, the rest of the people, all are fine. They're okay.
Yeah.
So if you understand, out of the 100 positive people, you then require 2 to 5 ventilators for those very, very sick patients. And if they receive the required ventilatory support, you know, with a special machine and in hospital, and they get all the specialists, you know, looking after them, we expect them to recover well. So imagine from 100 people being infected, now you have 1,000 people infected. So now you don't need 2 to 5 ventilators. Now you need 20 to 50 ventilators, you know. So therefore, if you load, if you have 1 million people that have the disease at the same time, your requirements for ventilators and extra support in hospital goes up exponentially. And that's the point we're trying to convey. Mm. It's not, the concern is not whether I get the illness or not. The concern is trying to spread that load over a longer period than rather than having the spike of this huge amount of patients coming into our hospitals all at the same time requiring that extra support. And I think this is the call with regards to Juma and all these other social gatherings. You know, the number that the president gave is not a magic number. You know, he said 100 people, you know, limited to 100 people. But the overarching message is that try and limit interactions with each other so that we can spread this load of disease over a longer period so that our health resources can cope with everything.
That makes a lot more sense. I didn't think of it that way, actually. Thank you for bringing that to that. Somebody also messaged me a little bit earlier. It just says that I came back from Umrah on the 1st of March. However, I fell ill in the Haram, and on the Friday evening, short of breath, fever, heartbeat of 110. Now I'm short of breath and my lungs are feeling sore. Does this mean that I need to go for the test, as we are constantly having people coughing and sneezing all over us? And I know that you've done touched on this, you know. But would you recommend somebody?
So,
like this?
So in this particular case, the patient has travelled. Yeah. Number one, and number two, the patient has acute respiratory symptoms. So in this case, this patient would meet the criteria for testing. Mm. So my advice to the listener would be to definitely seek medical advice. Make sure you get tested, and then obviously take it from there. Whether the patient can be quarantined at home. So the next step is, if I test positive, what does it mean?
Yes.
You know, as Dr. Abrams mentioned, the vast majority of people will have minor symptoms, meaning you stay at home, you rest, lots of fluids, normal flu medication, and you should make a full recovery. The 20% of patients will have severe symptoms, and of those 20%, a smaller percentage will become critical. So those are the patients that will require hospitalization. So the vast majority will just require rest at home and basic flu treatment, and they should recover. And obviously those that are serious. And the patients that are more at risk of developing serious disease are our elderly people, our elderly population, as well as our multi-comorbid population. So those are people who have other underlying medical conditions, asthma, emphysema, heart disease, diabetes, etc. So those are the patients that are at risk of developing severe disease and requiring ICU and ventilation and so on.
Let's look at the actual process of testing, Dr. Abrams. You know, so somebody comes in, they displaying all the symptoms as displayed by Dr. Ismail, and you're now saying, listen, you need to be tested. What is that process?
Yeah, so I'll give an example based on our facility and the way we do things, but I think this gets mirrored at most facilities. So when you come in, and there'll be a questionnaire at the door already asking you whether you've traveled, whether you have any symptoms to warrant testing as such, or any concern. Immediately they would have identified you as somebody that has possibly been infected with COVID-19. You'll be given a mask, and you'll be asked to, they'll move you across to a dedicated area. The reason why we have a dedicated area, so that all other patients coming to our emergency units, you know, they do not get exposed to these patients. In the dedicated area, you will have a doctor coming to see you. The doctor would have full protective garment on. And then, you know, they'll check your vitals, they'll take a brief history, and they'll do an examination on you. Thereafter, if you warrant testing, they'll get somebody from the laboratory coming, and they'll do swabs. The swabs will be of your nose and the back of your throat. Mm. Thereafter, in majority of cases, patients are quite mild, very mild symptoms. You know, the doctor will discuss with you what is meant by self-quarantine. And you'll be then discharged home for you to be in self-isolation until you receive the results. At the moment, I think it takes up to 72 hours for the test results to be given to you. And the main reason is because of the burden of the amount of patients that's coming through the door. It's not really because of the speed at which the laboratory can work, but
the resources.
So all of the laboratories have been inundated with the amount of tests coming through. So there's obviously an appeal for all those that warrant testing to come through for testing, and for the rest to just try and calm down a bit, you know, do not become hysterical about the fears of COVID-19, and drive such as this interview is trying to give the message across.
Yes.
You know, that you know, even though there's great fear out there, we, you know, there shouldn't be that panic. You know, as we've highlighted, majority of people, more than 90% of people, will be fine whether they contract the disease or not.
Yeah.
It's about spreading out the transmission, spreading out the amount of patients having it at any point in time.
Great. Tell you what, let's go and pay the bills quickly. On the other side, the questions about what does it cost to be tested? Are there costs to be tested? You know, what's the medication that is being used to treat these patients? So it's very good questions that we will have answered, inshallah. Stay tuned. It's gone 18 to 9 o'clock. We're back after this.
The Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM stereo.
This Ramadan, Africa Muslims Agency will be providing 12 million meals to those in need across the globe. Help us reach this goal. Sponsor a food hamper at 1,000 Rand per family, an iftar suhoor meal box at 80 Rand, or feed an entire village or refugee camp for a day at 12,000 Rand. Your participation is required. call Africa Muslims Agency on 021-699-0545 or donate online at africamuslimsagency.co.za. Africa Muslims Agency, inspiring the spirit of giving.
Family and make your life so much easier with 1UP Cash & Carry, where you get more for less and excellent customer service at its best. Remember, wholesale prices straight to the public. 1UP Cash & Carry, where you get more for less.
Discover the Africa of your dreams and surround yourself with spectacular beauty. Relax beneath the serene sunsets and explore wildlife at its natural best. It's where the pride of Africa comes together. Voted world's leading luxury safari park, Kwantu Private Game Reserve. Get to know the Big Five and enjoy our luxurious facilities with various five-star accommodation types. Enjoy tantalizing world-class halal cuisine while we pamper you during your stay. Indulge in the true African experience. For reservations, call now on 042-203-1400 or visit kwantu.co.za. Kwantu Private Game Reserve, the place of gathering. Breakfast Beat on 91.3 FM. Your voice in the morning.
Welcome back to Breakfast 91.3 FM. We've got the Melomed Hospital doctors in a studio with us talking about the coronavirus and the process around that. And, you know, the do's and don'ts, the myths and everything that goes with it. And basically what it is that you need to do when it comes to the virus. And just before the break, Dr. Rafiq Abrams, he spoke to us about the testing and the process that goes with that. Somebody came through and they wanted to know, are there costs involved for it to be tested?
So it'll all depend on where you go to be tested and the process which is followed. So as Dr. Ishmael has highlighted earlier on, that if you fall within the case definition and you have to get a test, where you present plays a role. So if you come to any private facility, there will definitely be costs involved for seeing a doctor, for making use of the facility, etc. And once you get tested, whether that test goes via the private laboratories or whether it goes via the national laboratories. So the national laboratories, it says that the cost for testing is free, but that's only for the test itself.
Right.
And so if you come to a private facility, you know, and you get tested via the national laboratory, your test is free, but the rest of the service may come at a cost. Whereas if you present to a state facility, you know, there may not be a cost for making use of the facility and seeing the doctor. I think depending on the private laboratory, I think there are two or three that offer the test, and I think the fees range. It's not exactly the same amount that they're charging. So obviously, they can inquire from those people. I'm not exactly sure of the exact amount.
I'm also probably that there is a probability that you are aware that, you know, when COVID-19 struck first out in China, you know, they had some medical aid schemes that already started sort of looking at the medical aid schemes to try and incorporate it should it hit, you know, the shores of South Africa, which it did. And one of them was Discovery that said that you know, that they've got this plan for COVID-19, and if you are tested positive, you kind of covered. It doesn't, you know, affect any other funds or anything of the sort.
Yeah, look, it's important to understand that this disease spreads rapidly. And once it reaches any shoreline, you know, because of the rapid spread, you have healthcare teams meeting constantly on a constant basis.
Yes.
And what we found over the last 2 weeks with all the meetings, all different stakeholders, you know, at times the guidelines and the goalposts change depending on what the current state of affairs are. So definitely medical aids will be in discussion all the time. You know, what should they cover, what should they not cover, for example. Also, laboratories, private or national laboratories, what should we test, what should we not test. For example, there was, I think, a 24-hour period where some private laboratories decided that, look, even if you're asymptomatic, they will still give you the option of testing whether you want it or not.
What does that mean?
So that's an important point. So what Dr. Abrams is saying is, for example, the difference between the free national lab and the private labs where you pay, the criteria to warrant the test is identical. Okay. So just because you're paying for the private lab doesn't mean they will do it if you don't fit the case definition. Mm. So that's an important point as well.
Yeah, so what I was saying, in that 24-hour period, because there was this huge demand from the general public for wanting to be tested, you know, they made this option available that if you do not have symptoms, you could still be tested, you know, via a private laboratory. But within that 24 hours, the system was inundated. And everything came to a halt as such. And the next day, you know, because of what was experienced, the rules of the game had to change again. We had to adapt.
Yes.
And therefore, all laboratories will only test patients that fall within the NICD classification, that you have to have symptoms, you have to have the history of traveling to a high-risk area or being in contact with somebody that's proven a positive case for COVID-19.
Right.
So coming back to your question regarding medical aids, I mean, I think every person or patient will have to contact their own medical aid to find out what's the current update on the medical aid and the standings regarding testing and COVID-19 and being managed for it.
I think that would be the most responsible thing because, like you said, I mean, it's different, packages or whatever that's available on different medical aids. The one thing that I also want to touch on, let's look at how COVID-19 is being treated at the moment. And can one be reinfected?
So basically the treatment will differ depending on the severity of the disease. So if you are of the 80% that are well, even if you're positive, you'll go home with a home quarantine advice. You dress, drink fluids, take symptomatic treatment for flu, etc. So that's the outpatient, well patient that management. If you are admitted, it will obviously depend on the severity of your symptoms. Certain patients will require admission, but won't require invasive ventilation, like being on a machine that's breathing for you. The patients that are critically ill in ICU, and of course these are protocols that are adapting as more research is being done and more information is coming to light, but you will obviously be mechanically ventilated, you will be supported, you'll be covered with antibiotics, broad spectrum antibiotics, even though it's a viral condition. You'd be treated with antiviral medications like Tamiflu, for example, which was used with the swine flu outbreaks, etc. And then various countries are experimenting with various different other medications. And of course, there's attempts to develop vaccines as well happening around the world. But it's a very, very much evolving field. And as more information comes to light, doctors will obviously adapt their approach.
I want to go for a break quickly, but before I do that, can one get reinfected?
Look, as Dr. Ishmael has highlighted, you know, this is evolving studies taking place. You know, all the research on COVID-19 is happening as things develop.
Yeah.
At this moment in time, we don't really have an answer. I'm certain, things will be published at a later point in time.
Because it's developing.
Yeah,
exactly.
Anecdotally, the body is incredibly smart.
Yeah.
And anecdotally, let's say someone was infected and they were mild and they recover. One would expect the patient to develop a certain immunity to further infections of the same pathogen. So you'd expect certain people who have gone through the disease to be immune. But once again, it's very early in the disease
and
process.
Evolving, like you say. I tell you what, let's pay the bills. I just want to also acknowledge 1868 on my SMS line saying that, Ghulam, these traffic is standing still on the N2 towards Somerset West. Lots of emergency vehicles passing by. It looks like it could have just been a massive accident. So if you're in the area, please just be on the lookout for that. After the break, we wrap it up on Breakfast 91.3 FM.
The Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM Stereo.
Breaking news. You can now make cash deposits directly into your Al Baraka transactional banking account at any one of 1600 Pick and Pay stores nationwide. Yes, you can deposit up to 5000 rand cash per transaction at the till point at any Pick and Pay stores nationwide, and funds reflect almost immediately into your Al Baraka transactional banking account. Terms and conditions apply. Contact customer services on 0860 225786 or visit www.albaraka.co.za for more details. Al Baraka, your partner bank. Al Baraka Banks and authorized financial services and credit provider.
Rocco Mama's Harrington, using only the best quality halal ingredients, our epic smash burgers are made fresh from farm to your face. Roll up your sleeves and come get messy with our sticky barbecue ribs, mofo wings, outrageous freak shakes, or make your own smash burger with our multiple choice exam. Rocco Mama's Harrington Square is giving away a 500 rand food voucher every week to a lucky listener who will then stand in line to win a 4,000 rand hamper. Simply tell us what's your favorite Rocco Mama's Harrington burger and why. SMS your answer to 47913. Rocco Mama's Harrington, situated at 29 Betancourt Street, corner of Barrack Street, Cape Town City Center.
Hey buddy.
Yeah, but daddy.
I see you picked up some weight, man.
Take it from quality meat.
They say it's Fairfield Meat Center, Borati.
The flesh that your heart arrays.
Number 339 4 Trekker Otero. Or call 021-939-4222.
When I see that flesh, I know that I'm at the right place.
Fairfield Meat Center. Put a smile back on your face.
Breakfast Beat on 91.3 FM. Your voice in the morning.
So we've got about 5 minutes and then we need to wrap it up. There's so much that we can talk about this morning on Breakfast 91.3. Very informative session. And I wish that we could have spent the entire 2 hours talking about this with all the amount of questions coming through. But let's just look at the visiting hours now at hospitals that have been restricted. Some of them said only between 3 and 4. It started off, you know, with only 3 and 4 for visiting hours. Now they put the hospitals on lockdown.
So, Gulam, our hospital group, the Milomed Hospital Group, the clinicians together with the executive management and the managers have decided to completely restrict visiting hours, and we are incredibly proud of that decision. And it certainly hasn't been a popular decision. There's been lots of backlash on social media platforms. But like I said earlier, the most vulnerable people to this disease are those with comorbid conditions, your hypertensives, your diabetics, your asthmatics, your emphysema, and our hospitals are full of those type of patients, and we as clinicians are obligated to protect those patients. So yes, we have restricted our visiting hours, and those are the reasons. It's purely to protect our patients that are vulnerable. The patients that, should they contract this disease, will be the ones that might pass away,
and even protecting the visitors.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
So let's Time. I wish this clock can just stand still for a few more minutes. Let's look at the hand sanitizers. There's a misconception around that. People are saying it has to be alcohol-based. Others are saying it doesn't have to be alcohol-based. It can be a natural hand sanitizer that you can use to clean your hands, because they're saying that's where it starts, by cleaning your hands. Dr. Abrams, what do you think?
Yeah, there's been lots of debates, you know, surrounding the efficacy of certain hand sanitizers, whether they should be alcohol-based or not. Just broadly to give everybody an understanding, what does washing your hands do? So if you can imagine on your hands, be there being a certain amount of bugs on your hand. So let's say there's 100 bugs on your hand. Mm. And now when I use soap and water and I mechanically I'm washing and I'm rubbing my hands and I have it under the water, once I've dried my hands, instead of there being 100 bugs, you now have 10 bugs left.
Right.
5 minutes later, I'm touching something which is dirty, and now from 10 bugs, it's gone up to 30 bugs. So the debate on whether I've used alcohol on my hands or a certain type of sanitizer or whether I wash my hands, all of them, they do more or less the same thing, but at that moment of cleaning their hands, they kill a certain amount of bugs.
Okay.
The better ones will be 90 of the 100 bugs, the worst ones will be like 30. But if you continue this process, if you wash your hands regularly,
yeah,
generally the amount of bugs will then be less.
Yeah, yeah.
So every time you're washing your hands, you'll have less and less bugs on your hands. So therefore, ideally, you know, alcohol-based sanitizers, they're great. But how much of us have alcohol-based sanitizers at home?
Exactly.
So normal soap and water, regular washing between doing activities has proven, you know, to be as effective as using alcohol-based sanitizers if you are doing it regularly.
Yes. Yes.
So I think we all have to get into the habit of, you know, having good hygiene, washing our hands regularly. Over this period of time, I know we do it subconsciously. We touch our face a lot.
Just
to become conscious of those things, at the times we've rubbed our nose and touched the child. Or, you know, it's all these just good practices of washing our hands, encouraging our children to wash their hands, and then also not rushing the process. If you see how the surgeons wash their hands, you know, they're very meticulous. Yeah. They concentrate. It's like a ritual, like a mini wudu they're taking,
yes,
you know.
Yes.
So we have to not rush the process. Use the soap. Make sure we cover all the areas, you know, and do it regularly.
Great. Stuff, and that's where I'm going to have to leave it. Thank you very much, Dr. Anis. I'm going to give you 30 seconds.
I think it's certainly a unique day for the Muslim community in that we will be separated in body during the Waqt of Jumu'ah, but let us be connected in our hearts and let us be connected in our du'as. And certainly, if we repent and make du'a, then we will find the mercy and the protection of Allah close to us.
Amen, inshallah. Dr. Abrams, I'm going to give you 30 seconds as well.
I concur with Dr. Ishmael has said. I mean, you know, in trying times, we have to look for the opportunities. And we have to take this, you know, this period of time and look at how we can maximize those opportunities. So for us spending time at home, try to spend more time with your families. Try to instill the values that you have in your life and try and instill it with your young children. For, you know, there are lots of imams and not making Jumu'ah.
Right.
I'm sure the families are so happy that they could at least spend some of that time with the family. Similarly, lots of healthcare workers, you know, and different other people that's got very busy jobs, you know, they have opportunity to maximize that time. And then lastly, I just want to ask all of the community to keep all of those on the front line in their du'as, and that Allah can assist us to make all the correct decisions and use us as a vehicle to help the community.
Ameen, inshallah. Shukran so much, Dr. Anis Ismail, as well as Dr. Rafiq Abrams from Melamed, looking at the whole scenario around the COVID.